You talk about growing up in a lush, rural, beautiful place, agricultural valley in the mountains of Northern California.
I would really like to pressure tan my own chunks of beef or my own stew or my own bone broth or my own chicken chili. The first order of business will be to acquire a pressure canner.
Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. So glad you're listening to Health Power. I just read a fantastic book, and it's something that is completely new to me. Now, of course, I've heard of canning, but I've never done it myself. So I learned so much from the Pressure Canning Cookbook, step-by-step recipes for pantry staples, gut-healing broths, which I love, meat, fish, and more, 50 meals into jars. It is by Jennifer Gomes, master food preserver, who joins us now. Hi, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me. Lisa, I'm glad to be here.
Great to have you on. I love the dedication. You write, to my children and husband for taste testing and tolerating a steamy kitchen in the heat of summer. I love you. I want to start with your background. You talk about growing up in a lush, rural, beautiful place, agricultural valley in the mountains of Northern California, and how your first love of preservation was water bath canning. And that your mom and grandma canned out of necessity. So you were able to see that. So just give us a little bit more about this wonderful background.
Thank you, Lisa. So I did. I was raised at the very tip top of California, and my family are cattle ranchers. And many people assume that means that we had lots and lots of money. We had lots of space. But as the expression goes, we were land rich and cash poor. So my mom and grandma had a big garden, and we canned a lot of fruits and like things like applesauce, blackberries, vegetables from the garden. And I just remember helping with that process. That was just absolutely part of every summer and fall. Like that was never a changing, that was a constant thing. And then I grew up and became a grown up, and as I was pregnant with my first daughter, I should have probably been painting the baby room like a normal mom might. But instead, I was just obsessed with this idea that this new baby would need something like super helpful to be eating. Never mind the fact that a newborn doesn't eat anything for months and months. But the first winter I was pregnant, I canned with a lot of calls to my mom and grandma and consulting a lot of books, I canned by myself probably 100 jars of applesauce, which my daughter did eventually eat, but not for a little while, of course. And yeah, I just, as I learned, I realized there was a lot, there were some good canning books out there, but a lot of their information was really geared toward the canner of yesteryear, in so much that the batches were very large and the instructions weren't really geared towards a person who had a day job, for, you know, for lack of a better expression, for like a busy mom of today who has only 2 hours while the baby naps. And I just thought, like, there's just not a ton of information that's really modern in that way. So that was how it all started for me.
Well, I also know from reading the book and the introduction that your husband encouraged you to learn to pressure can as well. Tell us about this.
Yeah. So I was raised in a family, because we grew our own beef and sold most of it commercially, we were chest freezer people. And that's a pretty specific designation, but everybody I knew who also grew up on a cattle ranch had a chest freezer. And that was the mode of preservation that was preferred, because if you butchered a whole steer, then that you require a significant amount of storage space. So my mom, I don't remember very often, if ever, using a pressure canner. So a pressure canner is the appropriate device and method for preserving low acid foods like meat and beans, stew, bone broth, and plain veggies. And you can use a water bath, like what you would imagine every grandma in America from 100 years ago using, the black speckled pot. That's appropriate for high acid recipes like applesauce, jam, jellies, fruit, and pickles. So my husband, he grew up in a logging background, and he's an avid hunter and angler. And very early on when we were dating, he said, like, oh, you need to learn how to pressure can, because he had heard that pressure canned venison was really delicious. And that was my very first inkling, like, oh, there's this type of canning that I don't know much about that does have supposedly really wonderful results.
Well, what is water canning? I mean, for people like me who came to this without any knowledge, I know now because I read the book. Can I walk people to get the book? But touch on this for us.
Sure. So water bath canning is a method of food preservation where a high acid canning recipe, that'll be jam, jelly, applesauce, most fruit are high in acid, and then pickles. So a vegetable that's submerged in a brine. You will use a boiling water process, a water bath canning process, because the heat of that boiling water is enough when paired with the acid inside those foods to create an environment inside the jar that's not hospitable to spoilers. So a safe canning process relies on heat and acid, or just a lot of heat, to create an environment. This is only metaphorical, not literal, but I like to think of it as it creates an environment inside the jars, kind of like Mars, like it's not hospitable to life. That's what you're going for with either canning process.
Right.
So I think water bath canning process is one, the most familiar to most people in America. And that's the kind where you have the boiling water. Right. Oftentimes it used to be done in the big black pot with the white speckles on the sides. And now, I mean, you can can in a stock pot or a pot that you might boil an artichoke in. But that is just a submersion in the boiling water. But a pressure canner has a locking lid. And that is what creates or helps build up. I mean, we need pressure, but what you really want is that heat from the pressure. So it gets over 240 degrees, which is the temperature that's required to kill any thermophilic bacteria, one of which would cause botulism poisoning if you weren't to use it. So those are just the two different types. And it's just a difference of about 20 degrees that you can achieve at home. So for low acid, you want the pressure canner. Okay. And for high acid recipes, water bath canning.
You have like jars and such. And you write, the amount of pressure inside a pressure canner and the corresponding heat is measured by a weighted gauge or a dial gauge, depending on the make and model of the pressure canner. So talk to us a little bit about the different models. What are we looking for? What's important to keep in mind? Things like that.
So if you're listening and you think, oh, I would really like to pressure can my own chunks of beef or my own stew or my own bone broth or my own chicken chili, then the first order of business will be to acquire a pressure canner. And I love a good thrift as much as the next gal. And there are lots of ways that you can thrift a used canner. But the things that you'll keep in mind, either with a brand new or a thrifted model, are there's a variety of safety features available on brand new models that let you know if there is pressure still remaining inside the pressure canner at the end of your process. And that's, I believe, I'm not an Instant Pot user. Sorry, maybe I'm a tiny bit too old, but I don't have an Instant Pot, but I'm told that people have, or that Instant Pots have those same types of features to let you know, like, hey, it's still pressurized. There are two big brands or major brands that are most popular in America. The Presto, which is a lower price point, but still very high quality. And then the All American, which is made in America, and the price point reflects that. But both are good quality. Both are user-friendly. Both are safe. So I think the most important thing, that regardless of how you acquire your pressure canner, the most important thing that needs to come with it is the manual. And even if you buy one used or you get one from your mother-in-law's garage, you should be able to get a manual for that particular model online for free and print it off or view it on your device. Cool. And that will tell you, hey, this needs some other little, you know, doodad, or it needs a replacement flange, or it needs, there's no way for me to know what all the pressure canners could need. But the most important thing you need with any pressure canner is the manual.
And I know in the book you talk about what brand of pressure canner should I buy? And you talk about digital canning appliances. And you mentioned, what was it, the American, All American brand?
So The All American brand has a unique type of lid that screws on. And that means that its seal is metal to metal, and you'll never have to buy a rubber replacement flange. All Americans are more expensive, so for some, that would be a barrier. I think they're close to $400, depending on the size that you get. They have several sizes, and they also have one size that comes in 6 colors. So that is really fun. There's also a brand called Presto, which is it's an American brand, but the device is made in China. So some people don't prefer that. But again, the price point reflects that. A new one is like $150, and they only offer 2 sizes. But I believe that brand Presto offers the only pressure canner that would work on an induction cooktop. So you would have to decide your budget and the size of the pot, because some of the All Americans are very large. You would have to have a specific cupboard in your kitchen to keep that, because it's a pretty darn big pot.
Oh, okay. You know, I love that you shared these 5 tips. These are your best tips for getting comfortable with the pressure canning process. The first is learn the parts of the pressure canner and memorize. Number 2 is read the manufacturer's manual that came with the pressure canner, or find it online like you talked about. 3, practice canning water. 4, pressure can a recipe with a few simple ingredients. And 5, suggest making the same recipe a few times. Mm-hmm. Those are really helpful. So I appreciate that you put that in the book.
There's more fear around just using a new appliance that you think like, oh, it's going to get really hot. And there's steam coming out the top. I mean, there's a significant amount of anxiety around approaching pressure canning for the first time, and especially if you're doing it alone, especially if you have little kids at the house. Yes. I mean, that can be kind of like, oh, maybe I better not try this. However, if you follow the directions included with your pressure canner, it might be helpful to think that it is a lot like an instant pot. It is doing a very similar job of creating great heat inside this compartment. I think if you just get out a pad of Post-its and just label the parts of your pressure canner, there's only 4 or 5 different little items that you need to learn. But if you don't know what each part is called, as you're canning along, you might feel like, oh, wait a second, what's the dial gauge supposed to do? Or where is the vent port? If you don't know, then that will create more concern, worry, anxiety. And God knows we don't need any more of that.
That is so true. Well, like I said, I knew nothing about this going in, and I learned so much. Again, the pressure canning cookbook, Jennifer Gones. I like this basic but not boring vegetables. You've got to separate a few beets, green or wax beans, corn, white potatoes, roasted peppers, tomato juice, fresh tomatoes, whole cherry tomatoes. My question is, because I've never eaten any pressure canned food in my life, what is the consistency? Let's say I do a green bean. I love green beans. I'm assuming it's a soft consistency, but not soggy or not mushy. Talk to us about this.
Sure. This is great. This is a great question. So some people in the canning space, both on social media, YouTube, some people are canning at home with the goal of creating like a mini factory in their kitchen. And that is a perfectly fine goal, but that isn't my goal. I want to help canners can things that their family will be excited to eat that still tastes really delicious or even better than what you can get at the store. So I love this question so much. So I would say that most vegetables have the same consistency as a can of green beans off the grocery store shelf. And bear that in mind as you learn about pressure canning. There are plenty of vegetables that are safe for pressure canning that just don't turn out super awesome. So for example, I say, like, you can safely include leafy greens like basil, cilantro for flavor, but that high heat just really makes them sort of dissipate into nothing and just not look particularly beautiful. My husband remembers being served cans of canned spinach as a child, and I always think of that because that's not particularly appetizing. So that said, I think corn, green beans, asparagus. I canned asparagus spears in this book also, and those are probably the most delicate vegetable recipe that I included, because they hold up, but just they're a little delicate. You know, the little tops can get kind of soft. So yeah. I hope that answers your question. Yeah.
Yes. No, it definitely does. Let's talk about hearty jars. You've got Hearty Basics, ground meat, cube meat, hot packed plain boneless chicken, raw packed plain boneless chicken. And then you've got some great meals in a jar. Graham's hamburger soup, Graham's taco soup, chili con carne. My question is, what is the meat consistency taste like? And does it depend on, I'm assuming it depends on the type of meat, whether it's poultry or venison or beef or pork.
While pressure canning is great for vegetables, I feel like it really shines in this category, in canning meat and soups and stews and beans. I feel like it really, really shines in that the home canned version is even more delicious and useful than a store-bought version.
Wow.
So I talk about in the book about hot pack versus raw pack. And I just mentioned that some canners are, their goal is to create a factory and just can all the things, put every dang thing they can in a jar, and that's that. That isn't my purpose. So I advocate for and encourage you to hot pack. So raw pack is you just chop up your raw meat and, you know, maybe put some salt and pepper on it and put it in the jar and process it that way. So raw meat in a jar, lid on, and you can it. That is perfectly safe. And I think the results are fine. Okay. I think hot pack, where you chop your meat into cubes or chunks, whatever the recipe calls for, and brown it and season it so that all the edges are browned, and then can it, I think the result is remarkably better. Remarkably better. And I wouldn't have necessarily...
Yeah, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. It's dramatic. I'm using that word pretty purposefully. That it is a dramatic improvement. And if you're thinking, my home is a factory, my kitchen's a factory, then you're going to raw pack and you're not going to take the time to pre-cook. But the way I do it that fits, I only have two children, but I do have two of them. I try to pressure can I'll make a large batch, and that is what we'll eat for supper. And I'll also can the remainder. So sometimes I'll cook a double batch of something, and that's what we'll eat for supper. And then maybe, you know, tomorrow night for leftovers, but then I'll can the rest so that what I'm cooking is pre-browned,
or sense.
I'm cooking it just as if I were going to eat it tonight, because I am, and then follow that pressure canning process.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I make a pot roast in the Instant Pot, but in the Instant Pot, the instructions on the recipe I found, which is great, is you brown the meat first.
Yeah.
And then you have the nice, and then you saute the onions in the fat from the meat, but then you got this nice brown meat. I'm sure if I just threw it all in there without doing that, the pot roast would not taste delicious.
Well, it's just not as good, which is fine. And there are times that it's appropriate to raw pack, and that's fine. But that, to me, it is more useful to have a pint jar of chili or stew or something that I could open up and just heat up really quickly, and it's delicious, that I'm excited to eat, than something that's kind of soft, kind of pale. It just is more useful to me.
Exactly. Well, talk to us about any of these recipes. I mentioned the Graham's hamburger soup. Graham's, of course, I love Mexican food, so the Graham's taco soup stood out. Anything with the Mexican seasoning?
Yeah. I think one chapter that I expect will be really popular is the bone broth section. So I give the instructions for creating a wide variety of bone broth, both with beef bones, wild game bones, chicken bones, including chicken feet, all the different ways that you can craft a bone broth, the types of vegetables and ingredients you might put on the tray when you're roasting your bones and vegetables. I think I give helpful tips for breaking that process into sensible chunks, because most of us have to leave the home at some point during the day, whether it's to pick kids up from school or to go to a job or whatever. I try to include sensible ways to break that process into manageable time chunks. And then I think the way that you can customize individual jars is unique to my book. So much so that you could have a girlfriend come over or a bunch of friends, and everyone gets to decide, okay, I want ginger in my jar, or I want extra garlic, or I want apple cider vinegar, or I want to add turmeric. Right. And based on those individual jars, you can just add that to the individual jar, ladle in your basic bone broth, and then pressure can them all at once. So I think that will be a really popular one, just given how useful bone broth is for cooking and so helpful and rich and delicious.
Right? I have tried so many skin and hair care products. I can't even tell you. It's insane. I mean, at one point, the closet in my bathroom was full with every imaginable product. And then I found what works, and that is OneEarthBodyCare.com. I am in love with their shampoo and conditioner bars. Completely changed the game for my daughter, who had a hard time finding a good shampoo and conditioner for her hair. Their face and body is amazing. I love their day and night oil, all natural ingredients, of course, and all of this essential oils, really great stuff. And of course, the deodorant has changed my life because I am no longer smelly. So go check them out now at OneEarthBodyCare.com.
Well, I need to make your basic bone broth, and I'll go through it pretty fast, but I would like to learn how to can it, which is, I'm so glad I have your book and we're doing this interview. I'm actually on a healing journey right now, which I'm sharing on the show. I'm having the health practitioner actually ask me all the questions. It's very interesting. So if people haven't seen that, they should check it out with Amber Romaniak, excuse me. And she said, to heal my gut, I need to drink more bone broth. And it's very expensive to buy it.
Oh,
so I was making it in a, I have a slow cooker as well as an Instant Pot. So I'm going to take your recipe and just make it in my slow cooker. And then I'd probably go through it in a few days, but eventually I do want to get brave enough. Because, you know, there is, I know you talk a little, you mentioned danger and people have these ideas, but I mean, I use my Instant Pot. I shouldn't be afraid to can, right? But what are some of the things you hear from people about any anxieties about getting into this canning process?
So I think there's a, I always say it's not an urban legend, it's a rural legend, right? Of everybody knows someone who had a, had a pressure canner explode or some sort of extreme thing. And upon investigation, I have found, just anecdotally, I found every time I press people to tell me more about that, one, it happened a very long time ago. And two, I think the thing that happens when people have some sort of problem happen with their pressure canner is that they are trying to open it too soon. And by that, I mean, they have pressure canned successfully. They've turned the stove off and they are some in for some whatever reason in a rush to remove the lid. I can, there's only one other time I've heard of a story where there was a separate problem, and I will detail that in a moment. But every other time it's people trying to take the lid off too soon. And what happens is there is still pressure built up inside and the lid flies up as soon as you give it an inch. And, you know, that's scary. There's probably a loud noise. The lid flies up. There's steam everywhere. It can be very dangerous. But that is in my, in my, I'm just one person and I have made a point of asking every person that's ever told me a story like that, tell me more. What happened? What step was this? The only person that had a story slightly different than that is that in a pressure canner, there are instructions that come with your book for using it as a pressure cooker. Because if you think about it, it is doing a very similar job as an Instant Pot, right? So you could put, cook a neck roast or whatever as a pressure cooker. But what that problem caused for one person that I know was that it left little particles of food stuck in the vent port, which is like the chimney of the lid. It's where steam escapes and you want that chimney clear, right? So that is only the only other time I've ever heard of a problem occurring is when that vent port was clogged. And every set of manual instructions tell you to check it with a toothpick or a pipe cleaner or with your eyeballs and make sure it's perfectly clear before you begin the canning process. So I understand, you know, concern or worry got to make sure I'm doing this right. But I think if you just got a manual and read it through, you would be like, oh, this is easy. I almost think it is easier in some ways than water bath canning because the steps are so specific and so clear. You only need, there's no part where you have to make a decision. You just simply have to follow the rules.
I see. So just to get an idea with the water bath canning, which is like an older fashioned way, right? How it used to be done. I'm picturing a big pot of boiling water, right? You tell me if I'm right. And you put this stuff in the jar and you boil it that way. But you must, do you have the lid on it when you put it in?
No.
I'm guessing otherwise it has to seal. Okay.
So what happens?
I'll make sure.
No, this is such a great conversation because so many people have a vague memory of somebody doing it but they don't necessarily have not done it themselves. So in both methods of preservation, you'll take a glass jar and fill it with your hot food, right? Your hot jam or your hot stew, and you'll apply a lid. So the jar that most people are familiar with is the ball or mason style two-piece lid. It's metal. And so you have the flat metal part that you purchase new because those flanges are meant to be canned with just one time. And then the ring that spins on, that screws on the top. So you'll apply the lid and then you'll put it either in your boiling water bath, like getting into a hot tub, or you'll put it into your pressure canner. And then both processes require you to bring it, the water bath up to boiling again, because it will have paused a bit by the addition of the cooler jars, right? A little bit cooler than boiling. And then in a pressure canner, you'll just put your hot jars in there and then you will, it's a step called exhausting. So the lid is put on nice and tight. You turn on the heat. There's only a little bit of water in the bottom. Okay. My pot has 3 quarts of water, which is like 3 inches. It's not very much. But the pressure canner uses the heat of pure steam. Right. So you bring it up to heat for usually you're exhausting or letting steam escape through the chimney, the vent port, for 10 minutes. And again, if you're listening to this and you're going to do this at home, refer to your manual because it may be slightly different. It might be a little bit different number of minutes, a little bit different number of quarts of water in the bottom. But once that pot is filled with pure steam, then you will set a timer based on the recipe and the pounds of pressure required. I know that sounds very complicated because I'm not showing you. This isn't a YouTube video. This is a podcast. But you're just getting it hot enough in there. You're just getting it hot in there. That's all you're doing. You're just building up heat. And then you'll set a timer for your recipe. So for many recipes, the time is like 25 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes.
Oh, okay. And you don't have to do anything, right? Well, it's doing it if you're using the modern devices.
Well, even if you're water bath canning, it's just covered with boiling water. Yeah, with water bath canning, you also aren't doing anything. You're just letting it hang out submerged in that hot tub, essentially. You're just letting it be covered with that boiling water. And in both processes, the heat forces the oxygen out of the jar, which creates a vacuum. And that is what will suck that lid down and create the anaerobic or no oxygen environment. That's how that lid gets sealed. It's the oxygen getting forced out through all that heat, and then it sucks that lid down. And it's probably familiar to many people that concave lid, it like makes a little pop or a click when you pull it out, like and it's very satisfying, and you would immediately think, oh, it's sealing, this is sealed. And that's exactly what it is. It's that vacuum seal being completed.
This is so interesting. So when you're doing, let's go back to green beans for a moment.
Sure.
Are you throwing those in there raw or putting them in there raw? And do you have to put anything, do you have to put water in with them, or you just put them in? Do you have any liquid in the jar?
I think most, I'm trying to think if there's an outlier to what I'm about to say. I don't want to misspeak, but most veggies get a little blanch. They get blanched first to help give good color. And then they're filled. Green beans, they are blanched. I'm reading the recipe right now really quickly. I just want to make sure I'm saying the right thing. You can cover them with hot water and then process, because water is a great conductor of heat, right? So most recipes are going to have you add liquid to the jar. Not all, but many.
That's what I thought. Okay. Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to rivers, lakes, and the sea. Fish in jars. Talk to us about this. And do you have to, do you also brown the fish before you stick it in there like you do the meat?
So some recipes for fish have you, I baked it for a little bit first and then added it. So it would be officially a hot pack.
That makes sense.
But not browned in the same way you would brown cubes of steak or chicken.
Right. Yeah. I wasn't sure if I was using the right terminology.
Yeah. Yeah. And fish is just sort of, it's not tricky, but it is, I think you would assume like light fish that it would can for a short amount of time or it would need to be processed for a short amount of time. But it actually has the longest processing times of anything you'll can. And you have to, you'll see the set of directions for fish is a little bit longer than just chicken or beef. Because there's just a few little steps that have to be followed to be sure that you are processing for the amount required. So for example, many fish recipes are processed for 100 minutes in a pint jar. So that's just that is the longest you'll ever can something. That's so long.
Wow.
And it's actually one of the other things that once I started canning, my husband said, as soon as I got good at canning venison, he was like, oh, we got to go to the ocean and get some fish and you can can that. I mean, that was like the next, the next goal because it can be so incredibly delicious. It's a superstar in your pantry shelf.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the assumption is like either that it's a white meat or that it just seems light that it would be safely pressure canned much more quickly. But that's not the case. It takes a little while. And what also is surprising is that there are safe canning recipes that include canning tuna in oil, which you get tuna cans, you know, from the grocery store in oil. But you might, you know, if you're a beginning canner, think, oh, I'm not supposed to do that. But you can in this particular instance.
Oh, that's awesome. We have so many great recipes in the book. Chicken with potatoes and garlic, chicken cacciatore. This is talking about chicken. Spicy peach barbecue chicken. I mean, it's so nice that you can spicy. Oh, I love lamb chops. Lamb chops, roasted root vegetables. You've got the tuna, garlic and herb, tilapia, fish taco tilapia, yellowfin tuna. I look at the book and I would think, oh, these are just recipes that you just make and eat, but you can them. And then it's for a busy lifestyle. What could be better, right? Once you take the time to do it and you got it and there it is. It seems awesome.
That's so sweet of you. So when I sat down and was thinking like, what, you know, how am I going to write this and what recipes do I want in it? I opened up my normal favorite cookbooks. My Martha Stewart Living, I have a cookbook I've referred to for years. I opened up several other cookbooks. Stephen Ranella of Meat Eater, his books were really a great resource. And I thought, what do I already like to cook or would I like to cook that has the types of ingredients that are safe for pressure canning that would be something I could adapt to the pressure canning process? And that was my starting point was what do I want to make for dinner? And then I worked backwards. Well, how do I make this recipe one that I can pressure can?
Right.
And that takes me to an important point. So for example, there's a Zuppa Toscana base recipe, right? And it's very similar to the potato soup recipe that you could get at the Olive Garden, a restaurant that's everywhere in America, right? But you do not safely can milk or dairy and cheese, which obviously makes Zuppa Toscana really good, right? So that recipe in particular and a few others call for you to add those delicious dairy ingredients after it's canned at the reheat. So when you're serving it, you stir in the cream, heat it up, and then serve it. But it's important to know that those dairy ingredients are not appropriate for canning.
Okay, that is good to know. What are some of your favorite recipes in the book?
Well, my Graham's hamburger soup is a favorite just because I ate it a lot as a kid. And my grandmother was a quintessential rancher's wife. She would cook a big meal for all the cowboys who were working cattle in the cold every winter. And you know, take lunch out to the corrals where we were working or where everybody was working. And so that would always include like a big sheet cake, like a Texas style sheet cake, and a pot of soup like this or a pot of chili. And it's just uses ground meat, which I think is an affordable option for lots of families, and potatoes. And it's just is a good, hearty, delicious soup that I feel very sentimental about. Another recipe that I am really glad that I figured out, because it did take a little figuring, was my husband's family immigrated from Portugal. And I had heard for years about this Portuguese meat recipe that his grandmother had made. And she's been, she'd passed a long time ago. And I never saw a written version of this recipe, but I'd heard about it for years. And I just started Googling Portuguese pork dishes. And I finally found, I was like, this must be what they're talking about. And it's vina de alos, and it's pork shoulder and garlic and onion, celery, carrots, potatoes, wine, and a lot of apple cider vinegar. And that turned out, I felt like this will be good, but it turned out so, so great. It was like, it might be the home run of the book in terms of what I thought I might be able to achieve and how delicious it turned out. I was really happy with it. I don't know if it's exactly like what his grandmother made.
That is,
I can't
awesome.
Say that, but it did turn out really delicious.
Oh, that is so good. Well, the whole book is great. Again, the Pressure Canning Cookbook, Step-by-Step Practices for Pantry Staples, Gut-Healing Broths, Meat, Fish, and More. Was there anything that we didn't touch on, Jennifer, that you were hoping we'd talk about today? And we're going to get all the ways to get it, of course.
Sure. I just, on my website, I have included a video walkthrough of a pressure canner that you could just watch for free. You don't have to put in your email address or anything. You just watch it. And my goal with that was just to show, like, this is what it looks like. This is how it works. These are the names of the parts, just as a visual walkthrough for anybody who's thinking, you know, you get excited about something. I understand the feeling of like, oh, I'm jazzed to try this. And then like, oh man, I don't know. You know, worry and concern, anxiety. You know,
yeah.
It plagues us all. On my website, there's a page for the book. And on the book page, there's that video walkthrough, which hopefully will help educate and soothe those fears so that you can dive in. Because as a mom, to me, it is such a useful tool to be able to cook supper and preserve some of it for the nights where, or for the times where I want to have something healthy to eat on the go or more quickly.
Yeah. No, I think it's amazing. So I love Skyhorse, by the way. I have a book come out with them in 2019. So I was happy whenever I get a book from Skyhorse. I'm like, yay, Skyhorse.
Oh, wonderful.
But, anyway, this is such a good book. Jennifer, I'm so glad you came on. Did you give us your website just now? I just want to make sure.
My blog is thedomesticwildflower.com. And there you'll find my book and tons of blog posts by me. And I co-host a canning podcast called Perfectly Preserved. And I think, I mean, we have like 75 episodes. By the time this airs, I think we'll be up to 75 episodes. So I love sharing canning that way. And
nice.
I'm most active on social media on Instagram. And my handle is at The Domestic Wildflower.
That's such a beautiful name. I love that.
Well, thank you.
So again, the Pressure Canning Cookbook. Check it out. Jennifer Gomes, Master Fruit Preserver. Everybody keep coming back to Health Power 5 days a week. Lots of good stuff. Rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks again.
Well, that's it for our show today. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. And we would appreciate it if you could please rate and review and leave a comment, because the more you engage with our podcast, the more you will find it and help other people find it wherever they listen to their podcast. So be sure to follow us. I'm at Andrea Donsky and at Naturally Savvy. And Lisa?
At Lisa Davis, MPH.
Thank you so much. And please share this episode, because the more you share shows you care. We'll see you next time.